G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Good morning, Whitey.
Yes, good morning, Daniel. How are you today?
I'm good. You're sounding a little bit indifferent.
No, I'm good.
You okay?
No, I'm fine. No,
some
I'm very
efficient
good.
Day?
No, it's not. I've had my challenges on that over the last few days, but that's okay. That's okay. There just seems to be a lot of baking going on in our house, which is just testing my mettle at the moment, to be honest.
Who's baking? And why?
Some people.
Why are we all of a sudden started baking? Lockdown is finished.
Kids are back at school. Yeah, come on, don't be
it's
silly.
It's positive thinking. If you put it out in the universe, sometimes things happen like that.
Yes. Wouldn't it be good to be positive about how that's all going, Daniel? Wouldn't it be positive? Wouldn't it be good? Yes. I was just looking this morning that Cristiano Ronaldo has tested positive to COVID-19 overnight. So,
oh, boy.
Yeah. So you think of, I'm just trying to think of the biggest name.
There it is.
He might be the biggest name that has tested positive.
Donald might be bigger.
To coronavirus. Yeah, true. And Boris.
Oh, boss,
but when
yeah.
it comes to the world of sport, I think that he would certainly be on the podium. He probably is on the podium for the biggest name in world sport anyway.
I don't think there's any grey area there. He's absolutely. He would be known. If Cristiano Ronaldo knocked on the front door of any home on the planet, I reckon 85% would know him. Now, they're probably thinking, why is Cristiano Ronaldo at my front door? They're probably, it's a few questions to be raised, but I think a big chunk of the planet would know who he was.
Who do you reckon would be the top three biggest names in world sport?
Oh, that's a good
would
question.
Would they all be footballers, do you think?
Oh, good question. But, probably, because they're so bloody big. LeBron would be close.
Yeah, LeBron, Messi and Ronaldo, would they be the top three?
That was sort of what I was thinking.
Yeah. You've got the three tennis players. Again, it's a world sport, so Nadal, Federer and Djokovic would have to be up there, I reckon. And then you've got, from an American perspective, Tom Brady would be up there. But again, that's only an American
outside
sport.
Outside of America, I'm not sure how big Tom is. There'd be a few. No, don't get me wrong. There'd be a few people that would know. Maybe 34%. I'm just trying to pick up percentage numbers now. I don't think Tom's in the conversation. LeBron. I think LeBron is, and Messi and Ronaldo will certainly be in the conversation. Roger and Raf. The tennis boys are interesting. Could you write?
Tiger.
Well, yeah. Yeah, the art of hanging around for a while helps this conversation. Tiger's been hanging around for a while. We might ask Jordan Ulessi, who he thinks might be in the podium for the world's most well-known sports star, because the Australian Wallaby has been good enough to join us very early in the morning on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning. How are you?
Mate, we're going well. We were talking the other day, Jordan, and there hadn't been a huge build-up from an Australian perspective about this game. We obviously knew it was happening, and you're over there in New Zealand taking on the All Blacks, but there wasn't a massive build-up like there normally is between those two teams. And then you go out and put on that performance, and we're thinking, hang on a second, the Wallabies are back. What was your assessment?
No, it was good. A new era, I guess, a new coach, a new coaching staff, and I guess a fresh start for Australian rugby. Everyone thinks of us as underdogs, so... they kind of don't pay too much attention to us at all, which has been pretty good. But, you're only as good as your last game. This week we're really building to hopefully put on another good performance this weekend.
But you mentioned a new era and a new coach. Dave Rennie's come in and taken charge. What's changed under Dave that you weren't experiencing or you weren't doing under previous regimes?
No, I just think it's probably a breath of fresh air for rugby, Australian rugby. He really likes to build our culture, which is huge. Team culture and embracing each other's cultures, from outside of Australia too. So I guess being in quarantine for 2 weeks also helps build that culture and build those bonds between players and stuff like that as well. So, yeah, he's been awesome, really driving, putting players, rooming with players you probably wouldn't usually room with as well, which is good. And, yeah, he's been massive on that, building connections and, yeah, building that team culture.
Jordan, you sort of touched on it then, but in your eyes, what is culture? What is good culture? And what's important to having a good culture? Because this can go across all sports, it can go across all workplaces. What would you say is imperative in your eyes?
I think, I guess, getting a deeper understanding of each other was really opened up during our culture sessions and really, you know, became vulnerable. And I guess when you become vulnerable, you definitely build those tighter bonds. So, you know, team culture is definitely understanding the player, but definitely going into a deeper meaning and, you know, really getting to know them, where they've come from, how they've gotten to where they're here. And then we do little team activities and stuff like that, which, you know, definitely builds that competitiveness as well between each other. So, you know, we're really here working hard, but, you know, at times we have games and had a bit of fun, which was good.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So then when it comes to on the field with a new coach, I mean, it's still very early days, so it's hard to tell exactly what changes you're making, but what is it that you think is going to be different and better than what it has previously for you to be in a position where you very nearly beat the All Blacks in New Zealand?
I guess it's that just having that attacking mindset. I mean, previous years we've always backed our set piece and stuff like that, but I mean, just probably just upskilling and having an attacking mindset to go and you know, chase the game, not you know, rest and you know, play that brand of footy. So you know, really exciting, playing a really exciting brand of footy, which is good. Obviously, you need a new pair of lungs for those for the speed that we're trying to play at. But yeah, I guess that's it. Yeah, the attacking footy that we're trying to push.
Now I've got to ask you, where were you when Reece Hodge took that shot for goal? And were you
I was probably 10 meters away from him, about to chase a kick. I actually didn't chase it because it was actually about to go in, and then at the last minute, the Wellington wind blew it to the post. Unfortunate for him, and then we ended up playing an extra 9 minutes of extra time, which was crazy. I mean, that's literally footy for you. What a game! But man, for him to hit that, would have been good to hit that penalty kick. It was so close. Probably would have had the whole of Australia stop.
Well, it nearly stopped anyway, Jordan. That was the thing. Like, word had filtered. I'm not sure how many people were watching at the start of the Bledisloe, at the start of the Test match, but as the game progressed, everyone started to turn on. All the conversation on social media became about the Wallabies and watch it. Turn it on. If you're not watching it, turn it on and watch it because we're going really well. And it took until after half time for things to start rolling. I mean, we scored both of our tries after half time, They had a bit of a lead going into it. What changed at half time? How did you manipulate the way you were playing at half time to come out and be able to hit the scoreboard like you did?
Nah, nothing. We just kept playing and keep playing and keep playing. I guess probably just not taking the foot off the throttle. At some point, you know, things are going to work. I guess in the first half, conditions weren't going our way. We were running against the wind as well. Probably would have helped in the second half too. But just keep chasing the game and keep pushing that attacking footy. We actually didn't change too much in the second half, but probably our finish as well came on and emptied the tank as well for the team, which was good too.
So there's a bit happening in the build-up too. I mean, had Michael Hooper playing his 100th test, which is a very special occasion for the skipper. He had three debutants as well. I imagine there would have been, along with a new coach, I imagine there would have been great emotion and energy in the group in the build-up to the test. Was it different to a recent test in the energy in the room and the build-up?
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, Michael Hooper playing his 100th test, boys definitely wanted to play with him, and also our debutants, but those boys are really good. They really didn't make the week about themselves, which was good. They definitely, obviously, it's a special occasion for them, but, you know, I think more so the chance to win our first Bledisloe was probably at the forefront of all of our minds. And, you know, definitely having that belief, which was good. It's always tough to go away and win in New Zealand. To come that close was pretty awesome for the boys. And, yeah, Mark Cooper, what a player, 100 tests and youngest to ever do it in the world in rugby, I guess. So I guess that's testament to his professionalism as a player and his longevity. Man never gets injured, touch wood. But he's definitely got another 100 in him, I guess. Bloody workhorse on the field, and he's a captain you definitely want to play for.
Hey, Jordan, we've got a bit of a theory here about the improvement in Australian rugby and maybe just having that domestic competition that we've had in recent times rather than the normal Super Rugby series may have helped Australian rugby. And then we see you play in the Bledisloe Cup and we see Australia play better. Do you think that this could be a real positive thing moving forward with how you've played your domestic rugby this season?
Domestic footy, those are the best games of the year. There's local derbies against different states. Definitely gets the boys up. And I guess in another sense, you're playing against guys who you're vying for Wallabies positions as well. So, if that's the way that they want to go forward, then I'm all for it. But, travelling the world and playing against South African teams and New Zealand teams is also cool too. Test your brand of footy against them and I guess get to experience the world as well. So, regardless of the way they want to go, it's good. Also good to have the Western Force in there as well. So, if that's the way they want to go, then I'll be all for it. The domestic competition, the local derbies each week for people to see would be pretty awesome. Hopefully they maybe start bringing a rugby union instead of Origin. It'll be pretty cool.
The most disappointing thing that has been over the last 24 hours for me and my family is... One, Kimmy didn't get to, I guess, break the story herself, which is really disappointing. And the story should be about her and the way she's been able to come back and get to where she's got to now, and that is signing a contract to play her professional sport. She made a huge sacrifice for us as a family to start our family. In the middle of her prime career, we chose to have, obviously, a child, and she sacrificed her body for that and gave up, so much time and so much love to the game that she has. And, the sacrifice for me is something extremely small for her to be away and commit to 10 months of playing netball. I mean, that's the thing. It's a 10-month contract. Realistically, Kim probably has 2-3 years of really good netball in her because we want to keep going with our family. So never in my mind did I ever consider going anywhere. And like I said, I'm a contracted player, Robbo. I feel like we're in a great window and we've had success the last 3 years. Obviously, we haven't won a premiership, which is what I want to win. But I still think that's the goal and that's the plan and that's realistic for us at the footy club. So to answer your question, Robbo, no, I never considered going anywhere. And I just wish that the story was more about Kim and how awesome it is that she's back playing.
Pretty well said, I reckon, by Adam Treloar last night on AFL 360 in response to the stories that he might be on the hop from the Magpies after he, as he eloquently put there, his wife, Kim Revellian, had signed a 10-month deal with the Queensland Firebirds, back where it all began for her in Super Netball, the ANZ Championship, making the story about her instead of him. So very, very eloquently put by Adam Treloar and put to bed, I think, very, very quickly. Whitey, any further conversation that he will be going to the Gold Coast Suns or to the Brisbane Lions in the next couple of years?
Yes, and he did put it really well. But then the other side of that is the reality of the fact that he is a star AFL player, and that's just what happens, particularly at this time of year. So I can certainly understand how the story kind of spiraled out of control, if you like. But then the way Adam said what he said last night then helps control the story, and now everyone will go on to something else. So you can understand the link. That makes perfect sense. A young family with a baby, and Kim says she's going to go and play netball in Queensland. Well, you're obviously going to ask that question. You're going to make that link. Or what happens to Adam? Kim's not playing in for Collingwood, or she's not going to play for the Melbourne Vixens. If Kim signed at the West Coast Fever, there would be links to Adam Treloar going and playing for one of the two sides, as Fremantle or West Coast. As Rodney Eade said yesterday, we talked about it. It's not going to be just a thing where she'll do it for 1 year. She's a good player. She'll play for a number of years.
Yeah, she's only 27, I think.
Kimmy. Mm. So she's got, if she wants to continue playing, and Adam said late in that piece that they do have plans to further the family and make that a little bit bigger. So that might put a bit of a stop to that at some stage. But at this stage, she's happy to be back out there on court and get back to her best, which is absolutely the best at the moment, the Australian Diamonds.
Yeah, and we can talk to Sherelle about that later, just how good she is and how long potentially she could play and what sort of impact she'll have. But that's just the reality of the fact that that Kimmy's married to an AFL footballer. It's not about AFL as such. It's about the fact that it's very rare for there to be a scenario where there are a couple that are athletes from different sports. They become a package deal, don't they? You think about it how it's going to impact the family or impact the partnership. I think the commentary was fair under the circumstances. Yes, it would have been nice if Kim could have announced it herself and all that sort of thing. And it is an amazing story for her to come back after having a child to be, you know, signing for one of the big netball clubs. But that's the reality of the situation.
It's ironic, Adam has to plead his case to the show that led the speculation charge off the SMS. Robbo and Jared went pretty hard with it the other night, which inflamed the story, no doubt. But he was very good last night, Adam Treloar, as he always is, I must admit. I like listening to him speak.
Yeah, he's good. He's very good. He's very good. And again, this is the... I say this every year. It's a really difficult time for everybody, whether you are a player, a manager, a football club, even in the media, because a lot of speculation becomes news. Questions that are thrown up, discussions that are had in the media become news. There's a difference between news, opinion, and fact. And it all just gets mushed up together through this period. And you get to a point where you don't know what's true and what's not. And things change as well. Like, the Jordan Dugowie thing interests me greatly. Because Carlton have come out and said, oh, we don't want Jordan Dugowie. We're not paying $1 million for Jordan Dugowie. We're not paying $900,000 for Jordan Dugowie. But does the conversation change if Jordan Dugowie is going to Carlton for $650,000 a year? And then the conversation is, well, we said we didn't want Jordan Dugowie at $900,000, but, you know, at $650,000 or whatever, that's a different set of circumstances. So conversations can change. And when you listen to clubs, listen to managers or even listen to players, it's a little bit trying to work out the cryptic crossword. It's the actual, you've got to really listen or watch the question very, very carefully. It's how they answer it and what component of the question they answer, as opposed to the holistic question. Does that make
sense? Any reference to the cryptic crossword on this program is appreciated. You're welcome to use that anytime. That's an excellent reference. I can't work out the cryptic crossword. My dad's a cryptic crossword specialist. I just can't get it. I just don't get it. So I don't understand.
No, I don't understand.
It's all too hard. No. I don't know which part to be looking for.
Yeah.
There's too many parts to be looking for. And then the overall question makes sense sometimes. And you're, oh, my God. I don't understand.
Yeah, no.
But no. You're right. It is an interesting time. I mean, Luke Parker became a subject of some speculation yesterday somehow. And he was very quick to shut that down.
I know. But then his response becomes news. So we've discussed Luke Parker on this program. You know, and this is my opinion, I don't know Luke Parker, and I don't know the situation at Sydney or at Essendon, but my view was that Essendon should move heaven and earth to try and get Luke Parker to go to Essendon to help create a new culture, leadership, the premiership IP, the Bloods culture IP, to go to Essendon, because I think that's what Essendon needs. Now, this is my opinion. I don't know anything. But then Gary Bacanara says, well, I think Luke Parker should go to Carlton for all the reasons that I thought he should go to Essendon. Now, Gary Bacanara's opinion carries weight. Mine doesn't. But Gary Bacanara's does, because he has been a list manager. He's a former premiership player. So when he says that in an opinion piece in the Herald Sun, that then just sparks the debate. Luke Parker then comments back. That becomes news. Luke Parker says no to the Blues. Luke Parker is not going anywhere, all these sorts of things. And then it just creates this cycle, this swirling cycle, which will continue for quite some time. And that's just what it is. And you know, the AFL love it, because we keep talking about AFL football. When there's only two games every weekend, as there is at the moment, it fills column inches in the paper or online and all that sort of stuff. And that's just what happens.
You journo types, Finnegan, all of you. You journos, you're a disgrace to the sport.
I know you hate this period.
I can't get enough. We should celebrate one of our own, Whitey, while we're talking some footy at the moment. Taylor Adams won the Copeland Trophy last night. Our man, he took out the BNF at the Magpies, which was a great effort. Had a fantastic year. It's no surprise to us, of course, because we've talked about his performances through the year and how amazing he's been for the Magpies. And he won in a landslide, really. 100 votes he polled. 71 votes was the second place getter, which is Scott Pendlebury, who, for the ninth time in 12 years of finals, finished on the podium for the Magpies, which highlights his consistency and his excellence through a long period of time. But that's a smacking. It's 29 votes. That's a smacking in their voting system, our man Taylor. So well done to Tate.
Yeah, and we talked to Taylor, was it last week, about when he, or a couple of weeks ago, when he was named in the All-Australian team. He was a shattered man last year at times when he got injured, and he got injured a couple of times, and he tried to push it and come back early and re-injured himself, and he got really emotional about it because he just wanted to be out there helping his teammates. And I don't know of too many more team-orientated, selfless footballers than Taylor Adams with the way he goes about it. Everything is about the team and how he can help the team be better. And so he thoroughly deserves that. And as he said, Scott Pendlebury, 12 times now he's finished in the top three in his career in the best and fairest. That is amazing.
He's a pretty good player.
Well, I mean, considering the fact he's now played over 300 games, and in his last 3 years, he's gone third, second, and second. It is quite remarkable.
Yep. He's a Magpie icon, is Scotty, and continue his great performance again this year. You know, and these are the great challenges. You see what the greats are made of when different things are thrown at them, and there's been lots of different things thrown at everyone this year in the world of AFL footy, and he's been able to step up again and say, you know what, I'll just go about my business and just be awesome, and you can just sit back and watch me. He's fantastic. He's fantastic. Some more news coming through on the world of sport, Whitey. We spoke before about Cristiano Ronaldo testing positive to the coronavirus, which is making headlines across the globe, which is fair enough, because he's one of the big stars. Another one of the global sporting stars has tested positive too, Dustin Johnson, your mate, from the world of golf. He's tested positive and is pulled out of the CJ Cup this week in the PGA Tour. So it's taken a few, the little virus in the last little while.
Yes, so that would be the biggest name in golf. We talked last week about Tony Finau, who wasn't able to play golf for now. But Dustin Johnson...
It's still a funny joke, that. I like
it's
that.
It's still really clever, isn't it?
It's still a funny no. joke. You're not playing for
but,
now.
But, I mean, certainly Dustin Johnson, world's number one golfer, or has been world's number one golfer a fair bit over the last period of time. It's interesting.
Yeah. And what about this? This will get your attention. Now, how do you reckon tennis is tracking on the as a sport across the globe? And from a broadcasting perspective, do you think tennis has got the traction that it would like to have around the globe? Because I'll preface it by, well, I'll preface, use the question, then I'll tell you the story so you can respond. There is a story today that ESPN is letting go of many of its remaining ATP rights outside of the Grand Slam events. It's not going to broadcast it. Tennis Channel fans would like that over in the States, and if you subscribe to that sort of stuff on the interweb, you'll have a one-stop shop for that sort of stuff. But ESPN, one of the major broadcasters on the planet, has said outside of the slams, probably not too interested, including like Indian Wells, which is often considered the fifth of the slams, mm-hmm. one of the biggest events on the circuit. I'm going to read you a paragraph from the release, which I found fascinating. Carrying the non-slam tournaments was also conflicting with other sports that garnered large audiences. A long tennis match could cut into college basketball or even a Little League World Series game, or vice versa. So what they're telling us is that a long tennis match, or a match of tennis, which could be at Indian Wells, one of the fifth, traditionally the fifth slam, so they call it, it would interrupt a Little League baseball game. And that would upset most people over there in the States. That's a fascinating outcome, I would have thought, for tennis. I can't see them being too happy about that.
No, but this sort of stuff's been on the cards for a while with ESPN. They're not doing tennis as much as they used to do it. And the problem with that is that they do it so well. They really do it well. And, you know, the massive production that they used to bring to Australia for it, the French Open, they haven't done it as much as they did, say, 10 years ago. So I don't think that's necessarily a surprise. But I also think, Harf, it's a sign of the future. I just don't know where it's all going to be in 10 years, 5 years, world sport, because I just don't think there's going to be the money in TV rights and in radio rights, for that matter. How sport is covered, it's going to be a really interesting time because they're not going to pay the money for rights, and also companies are not going to inject the production costs and the talent costs as they once did previously, because there's not as much money to go around, which means there's not going to be as much money in the sport to be able to pay the players what they've paid them and all those sorts of things. So, the next 5 years is going to be really interesting to see how it plays out, because also the way it's been covered is so different. They've had to do it on the cheap, a lot of these media companies, and they've still been able to cover it. So do they go back to the way they did do it previously, or do they do it the way they're doing it now because they can do it cheaper?
I don't know.
They won't do it as well, but it'll be that covered. Might not be as important as the fact that it's covered and they save money doing it.
Sharon McMahon, world's greatest ever netballer. Great to have you with us. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for that. I'm not sure. Am I appreciating the feel or the thought behind the mayor comparison? I'm not so sure. But I'll take any kind of even vague compliment I can at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a compliment. Absolutely. It's coming from a place of love. Don't you worry about that.
Okay. Right. Good.
Don't you worry about
that. Okay. Well, I'll take it then. I'll take it.
Well, they always talk about in racing, Sheryl, a mare in form. It's like you let them roll, just let them do their thing because they're fantastic and they just get winning. You're a winner. You're a mare in form. That's what I reckon. Don't look at me like that.
Well, look, what I will say is about if that's a reference to how the Melbourne Vixens are going, I would be. I am happy to let that roll. You know, we've had. Obviously, everyone who's playing sport at the elite level at the moment has, you know, had huge challenges, and certainly the Melbourne Vixens are no different to that. But I've just been so impressed with how they've handled everything, how they've handled the move and the uncertainty that sat around the beginning of their season in particular. And they've made it through to the grand final. So it's really exciting time. For some of these athletes, this is the first grand final they've played at this level. And so, it's really exciting. So I'm hoping we roll on for that too.
Yeah, well, it's going to be exciting. It is exciting. And we talked to Monday, Whitey? I can't remember. I'm getting very bad with this stuff. It was the grand final we wanted. It's the Super Netball grand final we wanted with the West Coast Fever, because they've been the ones that have tested us most throughout the season, Sheryl. Mm. And they put the lightning to the sword. They've had a horrible couple of weeks of lightning. They've tapered off really poorly in the last couple of weeks. And obviously, when you're playing the best teams, that can happen. They've made the Vixens twice and then the Fever on the weekend. But they've tapered off pretty ordinarily. And the Fever have got a point of difference, haven't they, the way they play?
Yeah, it was so interesting watching Lightning, actually. I mean, they finished second on the ladder. But as you say, had a really bad loss against the Vixens. We took them out in that semi. And also the previous couple of weeks that they played against Fever, and their form, unfortunately for them, really did drop away in the last little bit. This is the first Suncorp Super Netball Grand Final they haven't been involved in. So this is the fifth season, actually. So they've been really successful. And I kind of thought they might turn it on for the prelim, but they just couldn't. They couldn't go with the Fever onslaught, basically. And, you know, the point of difference, I guess, for the Fever is that they do have the biggest target, the best goal shooter in the league, most prolific easily in the league. And it's really challenging to stop the supply of ball into her when they've got their tails up and they're playing really well. So that's the challenge ahead for the Vixens. Not only that, their defence end, you know, it's a Diamonds goalkeeper up the other end. And so, you know, they've just got a lot of strength right over the court. So it's a big challenge.
And one of the other things we were talking about, Sherelle, was the story around Stacey Marinkovic and the fact that, you know, she's been named the Australian coach. Sort of, it wasn't seen as the obvious choice necessarily to be the Diamonds coach. But here is the coach that's taken the team, the Fever, that's historically never been a particularly strong team, into a final series, now into a grand final. It's a great story. And I would like to know, does she do things differently or has she just got a good team?
It's funny because after that announcement of the Aussie coach job, the team's really turned a corner. So it's been a massive change for them in terms of the success that they've had post the announcement. So I don't know. It's kind of galvanised them a bit. They lost their starting wing attack with a serious knee injury. So they've been able to cover that really well. I just think they're not necessarily doing anything too differently. It's just that they have just grown and got better across the season. You know, I think their standard play is to get the ball to Janelle Fowler as quickly as possible, who's the Jamaican goal shooter. And they're doing that really well and with a lot of confidence at the moment.
So how do you feel? You're an assistant coach of a team playing in a grand final. You've won grand finals as a player with the Vixens. You're now in a situation where you're in another state trying to be an assistant coach. Does it feel like you're playing in a grand final or does it feel a bit odd?
I feel sick. That's how I feel. Like when I think about it, grand final weeks are a funny thing. And if you've ever played in one at whatever level it is, it's like you're going about your normal day and then suddenly it'll pop into your head that there's the grand final coming up. And I get this, it's a physical jolt. It's almost like an electricity that runs through me. And so I'm getting that. But it is different. There's no doubt about that. I would love to be up there experiencing the week with the girls and you know, playing that role of assistant coach as you normally would. But obviously, unfortunately, I'm back here in Melbourne. So I'll be watching from the couch by myself. Maybe my husband will be there and my kids will probably be annoying me at the time, asking for, you know, an apple or a Nutella sandwich or something as we get to the final moments.
Tell breakfast all that out.
Yeah, exactly. Can't you speak to Dad?
Do something,
how many times
bro.
I say that? but it is. It's a really strange feeling, Whitey. And I'm trying not to think about that too much. I'm still playing my role as I have done all year, talking to the coaches, talking to the players at times, providing that feedback and look forward to the Fever as to how we might be able to break them down. But yeah, largely it's, well, as a lot of it has been, is out of my hands.
Yeah, well, surely I've been picturing your setup all week, I must admit. I'm trying to work out how you're going to sit there and watch it. And I didn't picture anyone sitting near you. I didn't picture Breck, certainly a door open so the kids could come in. I'd be shutting them right out of the world and just focusing in the little room by yourself with the TV.
Yeah, well, maybe I do need to look at my setup. One of the things that is stressing Melbourne netball fans at the moment is Dan's presser.
Dan's presser.
Because, yes, it happens often at, you know, that early afternoon kind of time slot, and we've been interrupted across the year with Dan's presser. And this is a big one, but so there's lots of things flying around, people tagging Dan Andrews going, hey, Dan, how about thinking of a different time to put the presser on? So anyone who wants to get behind the campaign to move the presser away from 1 o'clock on Sunday, get onto it, guys, because we want to push it.
Halftime entertainment, Dan's presser. That seems logical to me. Just do what the AFL do, make it longer. And hey, a serious question, Sherelle. Could you text Simone during a game? Are you able to communicate at all with her, like on a Google Docs setup or something like that, from your couch, or is that actually not allowed?
I think I probably could. To be honest, I'm not sure about the details of that, Whitey, in terms of the actual rules. We haven't been doing that. So it's certainly not something we'd throw into a grand final mix on for the only time in the year. I think, I actually don't know the answer to that. We do have communication as a general rule, and even this is a little bit different given the circumstances, but we do have computer communication with our stats people. So we've got information flowing through to screens that we've got on the bench as the game is going on live. So we get those live stats. So, I mean, potentially that's certainly something that could happen, but it's not something that we've done.
It's interesting, Whitey. Good thinking from you. Outside the box there from you. This is why you're on the big bucks.
But didn't that happen in the AFL? And
I think Ruffy was doing it at the Saints for a little while.
Yeah, but I reckon it happened quite a few years ago where you could, an assistant coach or a coach could text in to the coach's box with information. I just wonder whether that's done.
All the phones are taken off them for policy issues and gambling and responsibility issues. Phones are taken off all the personnel these days.
That's true, so. Although I don't think that happens in netball, but I don't think there's the same kind of level of, I guess, betting on what's happening in netball. So they don't have that. So to be honest, I'm not 100% sure. I seem to remember there was someone doing that with, like an earpiece in, but it wasn't allowed a few years ago in netball. I think that there was someone trying to stealthily do it, but it's not. No, it wasn't something at that point that was allowed, but I'm not sure.
Hey, Sherelle, why has Kim Ravalian only signed a 10-month deal with the Queensland Firebirds? We found out about it through football channels, funnily enough, but it's only a 10-month deal. Now, we know she's coming back from having the bub, which is fantastic. It's a great story, but why just the 10-monther?
Wasn't that a bizarre way for that story to be announced? I don't think anyone was super happy with the way that story broke. But, it's a good question. And what will happen is that the broadcast deal is coming up. I heard you talking a bit earlier, Whitey, about, the money that's going to be in sport in the coming years and how interesting that will be and how that will affect professional sports. And netball's right in the throes of it at the moment because we've got a 1 year to run on this broadcast deal that we've got with Telstra and Channel 9. And so then that's when they're aligning all the contracts. So unfortunately what will happen is that, again, like what happened last time, every single player will be off contract at the end of next year.
Oh.
It's not the ideal situation, but that's what that's how they're doing it. And next year, because of what happened with the extension of the season this year, they've then said instead of it being, another normal year next year, they're reducing that. So just the cost and being able to manage those things. So instead of it being the normal 12 months, it's dropped back to 10 months next year.
Okay, well, that makes a bit of sense. That's good. That's good clarity. Mm-hmm. So everyone's going to be out at the end of next year.
Yeah, technically, yes. I mean, there may be some kind of, agreements that are in place to extend it past, but officially it'll be, all off contract at the end of next year.
All right. Well, that makes a bit more sense because I was thinking, why would you sign a diamond to 10 months when you can lock her in for 3 or 4 years because she's only 27 or so? You could lock her in forever if you like.
Yeah, and anyone who, this is an interesting story, obviously, with Adam Treloar and what's going to happen there. And but if you, I don't know if anyone's on Instagram. I am. I like watching different people do their thing. Kim Ravalian has had this baby not very long ago. She is ripped like you've never seen an athlete ripped before. She has worked, obviously, incredibly hard to get herself back into a position where she can secure this contract. as Harf picks up his phone and starts searching Kim Ravalian. And she's
just
got
for
a,
work
she's
purposes.
Got a business
just for...
She's got a business that she's running. It's a fitness business, and she's in great. She's always been a really phenomenal athlete, and so she's thoroughly deserves this position. Yeah, she's looking confused as he looks her up on Instagram. She is in really good nick at the moment, so she'll be very much looking forward to the season next year, I would think.
One man who loves the trade period, he loves it more than most, is Adam Peacock, Fox Sports A-League commentator. Can't get enough of just sports news around the clock. He's back with us again on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Adam.
There's not a day goes by that there's not NFL trade news these days, correct? Even Christmas Day.
No, I know. It's quite remarkable. quite remarkable business, or part of the industry, the trade situation. But there's player acquisitions in the A-League as well. We learned yesterday that Callum McMenamin is going to join us in the mighty Melbourne Victory.
Yes, I'm impressed with this because it means that A-League clubs still have ambitions to sign people from outside of Australia, which we thought, given the new world that the A-League's in, or adjusted world, I should say, the A-League's in with the downgraded TV deal and the condensed season, because they want to get the season done by the middle of June for a variety of reasons, that it was going to be difficult for clubs to bring in quality from overseas. And this guy's quality on his day. He's been man of the match in an FA Cup, okay, it was 7 years ago. He's been up and down. He's lost his motivation a little bit because he should have stayed at Wigan, and then he should have gone to challenge himself, and he didn't. Kind of got a bit stale at a few clubs he went to. I think this is a good challenge for him, and I think he can have the effect that Craig Noone had at Melbourne City last season. So, quality signing, good signing. Not going to set the world on fire in terms of getting back page of the Herald Sun and getting all the publicity you need for the league, but he's going to make Melbourne Victory better.
What's it saying about what Grant Brebner's vision for the Victory is, this signing, do you think?
I think it means that he's been given the ability by the board and the club to go out and find players that he needs for the positions that he needs, rather than just trying to, like a couple of clubs are doing in the A-League, trying to find some young Aussie kids to fill gaps because of budgetary constraints and things like that. So it does show that the Melbourne Victory have a little bit of ambition. Now, how much ambition, we'll see with the further signing coming, because they need to cover a few. And let's be honest, last season was simply not good enough from their perspective, full stop, as a club. So, yeah, we'll see what they come up with in the next couple of weeks, because they need to get some things done, because they've got an Asian Champions League to play in towards the end of November. So they need to nail down their squad because it'll all happen very quickly.
Well, you mentioned last year's season, or this one that's just gone, Adam, about Victory. And he does bring with him some good leadership, some great experience. Do you think that that's just as important for Victory as it is with what he can do on the field?
Yeah, Grant Brebner you're talking about?
Callum with the signing.
Oh, McManaman. Yeah, definitely, definitely. He's been in places where some of these kids that he's going to be playing with, Victory, who are very talented, haven't been, and he's going to lift the standard. And the biggest thing I see with football, any sport actually, and Trell, you know this, and Half, you know this if you can remember it, is that when you go to training and you are training with quality players, you get better. You can't get better, you simply just get left behind. So I think, yeah, players of that standard will actually lift Vic free on the park and off the park. He'll just go about his business. I don't think he'll you know, looking at, he's not a DMRT, put it that way. He's not gonna entertain us with his Instagram feed. I'm pretty sure. He's not that kind of guy, but thank God, I think there's only one DMRT in that respect. And if you don't follow him on Instagram, by the way, follow Alessandro DMRT. It's an entertainment business in itself. So, I think on the field he's going to improve. He can't not, given that Victory are going to go in next season with as many kids as they ever have in the history of the club.
There you go. We're giving all sorts of Instagram advice here on the show this morning, Adam. So thanks for adding to that. With the A-League more generally, obviously we've had a ridiculous year and season over the last 12 months or so. What has the impact been for the A-League? How have they handled this situation and this period of time?
Yeah, it's not been easy because if I think we've kind of half knew it going in when it started to all fall apart in what, April this year. I'm talking the general sense of COVID, that if your sport had a few cracks, well, they'll quickly become crevices. And even like you look at cricket, they thought, oh yeah, we're pretty good. We've got enough time to sort ourselves out. We lost those one days against New Zealand earlier in the year, and that was about it. We've got 6 months to sort out something. By that time when it comes around, we'll be all right. No, it wasn't, because there's a few issues with the BBL, and Channel 7 are trying to take advantage of that. So that's just one example. And like AFL have been able to get through, but still I'd hate to see what their bill is going to be for their hubs that they've had, Rugby League as well. They've got discussions to have with players. Now, A-League got through it, was the first cop to get done. It was amazing that they got it done. They've had these difficult negotiations with the players where basically they ended up saying, each club go and negotiate, and they've done pretty well out of it, I think. I think it's a lot better than what people were expecting.
and doomsday didn't quite come, and it battled along, but it does need to sort itself out of the governance level still. It needs the independence, it needs the clubs to take over, it needs the clubs to grab it by the neck and go, yeah, this is what we want to do with it. We'll wait and see what exactly can transpire in that regard. But the one thing that I have hope for with the new competition is that there's a lot of Australian kids going to get an opportunity, and I'm excited about that prospect. Mm.
Adam, tell us what happened at the Wanderers, because it seems quite odd.
It is odd, very odd. It kind of hit me by surprise the other day when JP Demarini, just to go, that they basically sent out a media release that went three lines and said, we thank him for his services. We're looking to appoint a new coach in the next couple of days. And I was like, oh, okay, is something untoward happened here with JP? Not the case. They've just come to the conclusion that he was a manager that was only going to see them through until the end of the season that's coming, and then they were going to appoint someone else. And then they thought, well, we've actually identified someone that we want, and no one can find out who. This is the great mystery at the moment, that could be available right now, so we'll let JP go right now and not faff about with it. He obviously got wind of it, and, he's walked away from the club. So who that person is remains to be seen. There's three names that have come up in the past 48 hours. Carl Robinson from Newcastle Jets, but he's under contract, and Newcastle Jets say they haven't been contacted. So one would think that they'd have a few manners and go about it the right way if they were going to try and poach a coach from another, under contract coach from another club. John Aloisi and Graham Arnold, his name's come up. Socceroos boss.
Right.
So what happens remains to be seen. I'm not entirely sure. We'll know maybe, hopefully, by the end of the week.
They've had all sorts of troubles since Tony Popovich left the West Sydney Wanderers. What is the problem with the West Sydney Wanderers?
I think that it's always difficult. It's not an exact science to say that, yeah, you've got this big, imposing character who basically set up the club. The story goes, when Tony Popovich got off the plane to take over as West Sydney Wanderers coach, he drove straight to the CEO's house, and then they started planning a squad on a big piece of butcher's paper. Basically, that's how quickly he got to the job, and that's how much of an influence he had on the club. He set up the club from a football perspective. Then he walked away, and then it was like, okay, well, how do we fill this void left by not only a football manager, but a guy that basically was the pulse of the football club? And they couldn't find it. They went with Josip Gombau, didn't quite work out. Went with Marcus Babbel, it didn't quite work out. JP Demarini tried to come in and be the interim. Didn't quite work out. So they've not been able to, in a similar kind of way to what happened with Manchester United, at a much different level, obviously.
Yeah.
With Sir Alex Ferguson being this big, big character that kind of was the pulse of the club, and then he walks away or goes, and they don't know how to exactly replace him with do they go a similar type of character? Do they go in a different direction? And yeah, they just haven't been able to get it right yet.
He's got him! That's the end of the game in the nick of time. Queensland with the first Marsh Sheffield Shield clash of the summer.
Lane to victory. Now look at that. Just clipping, or more than clipping, and Kennett did to the off stump. And look at the jubilation amongst the Queensland infielders. And Swepson was flying away in celebration.
And he did that a few times too, Mitch Swepson, yesterday for Queensland, as they were able to, in the end, get on top of Tasmania. Saw them out, they did. Bowled them out for 220 in the second dig, and then won by an innings and 59 runs after setting up a massive total with 529. And Mitch Swepson was one of the champs for the Bulls yesterday, spinning them to victory. He joins us on The Breakfast Club this morning. Good morning, Mitch.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Good on you, buddy. Great to have you on the program. Nice way to start the season with a dramatic win.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost the perfect performance for us. We sort of wanted to start really well this season, and I don't think you could sort of ask for much more than the performance we put out there. It's great to see our batters score some runs and obviously be able to bowl a team out on that wicket. So great start for us.
And a good start for you too, particularly yesterday. I mean, how's your shoulder this morning? You bowled 45 overs in the second dig.
Yeah, a little bit sore this morning, but it's something that I've really wanted to do a lot more of, is bowl some longer spells and bowl some more overs. And I've bowled plenty of balls in the net over the years, so I've conditioned the body pretty well. So I'm sure they'll be a little bit sore today, but I'll be fine in a couple of days' time, ready to go again.
Well, talking about that condition, Mitch, obviously everything's so different this year with the way you've been able to prepare. What has that been like in the lead-up, and how did you feel out on the field? Do you feel like it's a normal season? You've been able to prepare in a similar way?
Yeah, oh, I guess we've been pretty lucky up in Queensland. We've sort of had the luxury of training outdoors since May, really. We've had our facilities up there ready to go. And we've been lucky that our grade competition starts in early September. So we've been able to play some competitive cricket, some games in early September. And yeah, I guess that really held us in good stead for the last week when we were out there in the middle. What didn't really feel too foreign to us because we've been playing a bit of cricket back home. So that was really good.
I keep forgetting the difference between Queensland and Melbourne.
Yeah, that's right. You guys have been a bit stiff down there from what I hear. So yeah, it's been a bit of a different story up in Queensland.
Yeah, we don't want to talk about that.
No, we don't want to talk about that at all.
No, let's move on.
Hey, Mitchell, congratulations. It was great watching you do it again yesterday. You did it against Victoria, spinning Queensland to victory in dramatic circumstances, and now you've done it again. Take us through your mindset, because it seems like you want the ball in your hands in high-pressure environments.
Yeah, 100%. I think I was always brought up as a leg spinner. You know, sort of late in the game is your time to shine. That's when the captain's going to throw you the ball to win the game. And I guess in my Shield career, I haven't had a lot of opportunity to do that. But last year at the MCG and then obviously yesterday, it was those are two times where it's really been thrown to me to sort of win the game for the team. And it's just, I just love bowling leg spin and trying to get guys out and trying to win the game for Queensland. It really excites me, and it really, it's something that, I want to do more of. Luckily, the two times it's been thrown to me, I've been able to get the job done. It's something that I want to do more of, and it's just so much fun being out there doing what I love and trying to win games for my state.
Yeah, and you can see that excitement. You can see you sort of thriving in that environment. How nervous was it for you yesterday? Because, you know, the wicket was okay for a spinner, but it was pretty slow, and they were fairly patient. In fact, they were very patient, Tasmania. Do you start to, not panic, but do you start to get nervous? Take us through your mindset in that last sort of hour when you're pushing hard for victory. Everyone's around the bat, but the wickets aren't coming freely.
Yeah, you definitely start to feel a little bit of the pressure. I think as soon as that last hour started, obviously you can bowl as many overs as you want in that last hour, but it goes on time once that last hour starts. So I think when that moment hit, when the clock ticked over to that last hour, I definitely started to get a bit of adrenaline running, and the nerves started to go a little bit. But I guess you always have to bring yourself back to the reason why you're there, and just to keep doing what's been working for you the whole game and your whole career. I was lucky that I've got, you know, Uzi was good as a captain. He kept coming up to me and just kept telling me to bowl my best ball, and those reminders are really good, and it helps keep you sort of focused on the task and not get too flustered, I guess. So that was really good as well.
Ashton Agar set the cricketing world alight with his performance in the first game of the season. He's been good enough to join us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Ashton.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good on you, buddy. Nice to have you with us. Way too good. Way too good you were for South Australia. Got a bit tight late in the day, but you got the chockies. A win in the early start of the season, I imagine, is very, very comforting.
It's a lovely way to start the season. I think, it is really nice. You know, it did get a bit tight at the end of the day there, but we know that on pitches like that, things happen really quickly and often late in the day. You know, if you get the recognised batsman out, there's a bit of nerves that hang around. Some poor decisions might get made, and if we bowl well enough,
you'd hope you'd be able to take the 10 wicket.
Yeah, well, that's sort of how it panned out for you guys. It was a great performance. And for you individually, you broke, not broke a record, but for the first time in 10 years, someone had taken a five from made 100 in a Shield game, and you and Michael Neeser did it within half an hour of each other on day two, I think it was, which was a fantastic effort. Your off-season, Ashton, what have you been focusing on, your batting or your bowling?
Well, both, as always, to be honest. But I think my batting, the practice has been extremely intentional. You know, I've hit a lot more balls along the ground this time, and I've focused on purely just picking my hands up and watching the ball as hard as I can, and then just playing good cricket shots. I think last year I probably got carried away a little bit with, you know, trying to work out how I could hit more boundaries, hit more sixes, in terms of identifying a finishing role in the Australian white ball side. But for me, really, I bat the best when I just play good cricket shots and, you know, let my natural skill take over without trying to force it. So that's what I really focused on. With my bowling, it's just trying to get that really nice shape and the more revs and, you know, better shape through the air. So when you get on a pitch that might not be too responsive, you have a number of ways to sort of do the batsman.
Ashton, that's great insight. And I'm really interested in focusing on that batting for a moment, because we spoke on our show earlier in the week about the significance of you being selected in the top six. And I guess with that, you get treated more as a batsman. You get more of an opportunity potentially. But I'm just interested in how that took place. Was that you going to them or them going to you and then repaying that faith immediately?
I think, you know, both, you know, I've had that discussion before. You know, I've always said that I want to bat higher. And we've not had a laugh about it, but, you know, I've always sort of slightly pushed for it. but then last year, having made some runs in field cricket, coming off, you know, some good form in the T20s, albeit, you know, not a lot of runs. You don't get a lot of opportunity there, but just playing well. And a couple of guys being away in the IPL, there was sort of there was an opportunity there to play the genuine all-rounder role. And fortunately, I took that.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly did. You got your first 100 in 4 or 5 years in first-class cricket. Do you think this is the season that you can be potentially recast as a cricketer, that you're not the bowler that can bat, but you're actually someone that can do both really well and potentially be that genuine all-rounder, potentially even a batting all-rounder if the circumstances arise?
Oh, look, it's really cool to be thought of that way. And it feels great. I've obviously felt capable of doing that for some time, and probably, you know, I've batted 7 and 8 for a long time. But yeah, just to start with 100 at six, I guess, is really an important thing if you want to get viewed as that genuine all rounder. But all I do know is that cricket can change really quickly, so. You know, I needed to keep making runs and keep trying to take those opportunities and take the wickets when I can as well.
And it's nice to be able to chat to one of the finest young players in the nation when it comes to Australian rules football. He plays for the Brisbane Lions and his name is Hugh McCluggage, and he's with us and ready to go in preparation for a preliminary final at home on Saturday night. Hugh, good morning.
Morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Good on you, buddy. Great to have you on, particularly in preliminary final week. We know there's lots happening, so we do appreciate the effort you make to have a chat to us. How excited are you building up to the game?
Yeah, I'm absolutely pumped. Obviously, I haven't played in a prelim before, and a lot of our boys haven't, so they're usually close games, and yeah, we can't wait to get out there against a great opposition in Geelong.
What did you do last weekend, Hugh? Yeah, the weekend off after that magnificent qualifying final victory against the Tigers. What did you do last weekend?
Yeah, a whole lot of not much. We sat at home and watched a couple of games, and then got out to the golf course on Sunday to clear the head a bit, but that's about it. There's not really much we can do. It was quite weird. We've probably played one game in 20-odd days now, and after having such a condensed fixture during the year, it's been a little bit different, but the body's definitely enjoyed a break.
Yeah, not to, how closely did you watch the games?
Yeah, fairly closely. I mean, you just sit at home with the boys, but you take a keen interest, especially in the Collingwood Geelong game, because obviously we were going to play whoever won that. And yeah, you watch the other game as well, just as a spectator like everyone else.
Can you believe what's happened, Hugh? I mean, you came to the Lions as a really high draft pick. It was going to be potentially a long build, and all of a sudden, you've hardly played any games, and you're in a home preliminary final. It's just happened so quickly.
Yeah, it's been pretty amazing. You probably don't realise how quickly it's happened until you do take the time to look back and reflect a little bit. But yeah, when I first got here, I think got here with Fags in our first year, we were losing, conceding at well over 100 points a game, and finished bottom of the ladder. And then in our third year, all of a sudden we pushed up into the top four, and albeit losing a couple of finals, but yeah, the rise has been incredibly quick, I think, and it's been really enjoyable to be a part of it.
Is there something like a special sauce, a secret recipe that has seen it happen so quickly, or is it just hard work? I mean, what would you put it down to? Because it's been quite remarkable.
Yeah, there's probably no one thing you put it down to. I think we've got a really driven group, not just the players, but also the coaches and the medical staff. I mean, to be able to have nearly our whole list available for selection this week, and for it to have been that way for most of the last 3 or 4 years when I've been here, is a testament to our medical staff. And then, yeah, the coaching staff work really hard, and obviously the players as well have always come back in good nick for pre-seasons and set ourselves up for the best possible chance during the year. But, yeah, we've always just strived for constant improvement. I think that's been the main messaging, and that can be put down to that a little bit as well.
Is it different this year, Hugh? Is it different after winning that final? Is there a different feeling now that you know you can?
I think we always knew we could. I think this year there's probably just a little bit more of a calm feeling around the club because we have been there before. Last year there was a lot of excitement and a lot of the unknown for our players. We have quite a young group still, and no one had really played a final apart from a handful that had been at other clubs, and Richie as well. So yeah, this year it just feels a lot more calm and like we're in control of our own destiny. And we know that things can happen, and you know, prelims, as I said before, are extremely tough games to win. So
yeah,
we're excited for that, and we're looking forward to the challenge.
I'm just interested about the role that Chris Fagan plays in this, and also, say, Grant Birchall, who know what it's like to be part of premiership teams and winning finals teams. Do they play a more significant role and reference Hawthorn at all, or is this all about your own future and it's all about Brisbane?
We've referenced Hawthorn a little bit. I know a lot of, listening to Birch's press conference, a lot of the boys have gone up to him and asked for advice. There's only so much you can give, I think, because yeah, everyone's got to find their way and do their thing. But we definitely talk about experiences that they had throughout their times at Hawthorn, and I think that's why we recruited Hodgie and Birch, to be able to be that influence during these times. And Birch just brings a real sense of control to that back line, with not only his on-field you know, playing ability with his composure with ball in hand, but also in between goals. He's very calm sort of bloke. So, yeah, he brings a good direction. And then Fags, obviously, we know what he brings, and he'll get us all ready for the game.
How much discussion has been about Geelong this week already, or is that later in the week?
No, we do a bit of an oppo preview early in the week. So we've spoken about Geelong and what their strengths are, and yeah, we obviously want to look at what they can do, but we also, once the ladder in the week comes, we want to focus on what we can do and what our strengths are. So I think we played to them really well against Richmond, and hopefully we can do the same again on Saturday night.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.